I'm sorry. Yes, go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Robin, I put together a couple of thoughts as to an agenda, and maybe I should let you know those and then see if either if that suits you or if it sort of covers what you'd like to cover.
That sounds fabulous.
All right, great. So really, I thought the first thing to do would probably be to give you an introduction. I know I sent you a couple of materials, but it's probably worth saying a few things on, you know, sort of in personal introduction. Bring you up to date, and again, I've sent you something about the current position with regard to candidacy. Then really, I think, consider any questions or issues from you and what those might be. Give you, after that, maybe a sense of how I think see things going as chair of the council and how it, you know, how it might work. And then, you know, finally see if there's anything left over. But that seemed like a reasonable structure to me. You know, make sure I understand, you know, your issues and concerns as well as give you some sense of my thinking. I felt that in doing that, we may need to follow up. I may not be able to answer all of your questions, concerns, or issues right away, but, you know, I'll do my best to cover them in this call. But if necessary, we could schedule a follow-up as well. So that's really my thought. It's sort of a four-part structure, introduction, clarify where we're at the moment, consider your questions or issues, give you a sense of where I'm at, and then see if we need a follow-up. How does that sound?
That sounds like a great way forward.
Good. All right. Well, let me just make sure that it's clear to you and anyone else who either comes on the call or who listens to the audio where I'm coming from, really. I mean, I think my background, as you will have seen from my I just put that little summary CV, two-page CV, and you're welcome to distribute that to others if they'd like to see. But really, I've worked for the last 15 years in a variety of organizations, mostly commercial, but that included two member-elected stints on the board of the UK registry Nominet. And you should be aware that Nominet is a not-for-profit registry run in the public interest, which has got a diverse stakeholder group and actually has some quite significant challenges that it's had to overcome in the past. And in fact, the second I left the board to continue with my sort of regular, normal commercial career and was asked to come back to help Nominet on the board at a particularly difficult time in its evolution. And without going into all the details, I think it, you know, tells you something that I was brought in as someone who was trusted to work on the board and work with a degree of independence and, you know, integrity in navigating some quite difficult times for the company in its relationship with its stakeholders, which included the UK government, the registrar members, and so on. So I've worked in, you know, significantly in the commercial and private sector, also on a public company board, and there's particularly strict rules of, you know, corporate governance and behavior that one must conform to as a director of a public company. So I'm familiar with the sort of constraints of corporate governance and what that means and how it means to work, you know, and all of that's really summed up in a set of personal qualities, which, you know, I would say to you that I'm, you know, professional and hardworking. If you talk to people, you'll hear that, you know, I have, you know, strong personal integrity. I'm even-handed in the way I handle things. And, you know, I'm really motivated in many ways by producing successful outcomes. If that happens to be financially beneficial, that's great. But it's not, you know, a sole driver for me by a long way. I mean, a key thing for me is, as I say, producing something which I feel is as an effective and successful outcome. So in some ways, I think that's really what being a chair is all about, is you know, working with a group of people. And in particular, in this context, with a pretty diverse group of both individuals and representative positions, and trying to pull that together, which, frankly, I don't think is an easy job to do well. And I'm under no illusions about that. So that's really where I'm coming from at a personal level. Maybe I should just pause before sort of going on to the next point about where the current position is, and just see if that sparks anything. And I'm happy to sort of take any sort of questions or thoughts from you as we go through, or for you to sort of wrap them up you know, for a discussion at the end.
Yeah, why don't I do that? Why don't I let you go forward, and then if there are any issues left that haven't been covered, specific questions we have, let me go ahead and ask those at that time.
Right, great. So with regard to the current position, when I first approached you, it wasn't clear to me that I would be a nominee from the contracted party's house. We had more than one prospective nominee within our stakeholder group, and therefore ultimately within our house. That's been kicked around and worked on over the last period, the last few weeks really, and we've finally come up with a candidate, and that happens to be me. So it's slightly different. I wasn't 100% sure when we set up this call whether I'd be talking to you as a prospective nominee or as a nominee, and now it's clear, as you perhaps have seen from your email this morning, that I am now the contracted party's house nominee. So events have sort of come into place rather quickly for a number of reasons, and so whilst I have given this quite a bit of thought, I'm still some of my thoughts are still developing about how this, you know, how to most effectively work is as a council chair, should I be successful in being elected. And in fact, in part of that is where we'll get to next, in a way, is understanding a little more of what the different, you know, groups within the GNSO council expect from a chair, and trying to marry those with what, you know, my personal views of how to effectively chair the council with what people actually expect and want from a chair. One thing I would say is just almost a reminder, I think, but, you know, I think it's a really interesting point that as a registry stakeholder group councillor, which is the method by which I'm on the council, I would be directed to vote by the stakeholder group on any particular issues. And I'm sure you know that, but it's worth sort of reminding myself as much as anyone else about this. And I think that creates arguably, and you may agree or not, but an opportunity for neutrality, because, you know, I don't have any choice as to how I vote. My vote will ultimately be, if and when things come to a vote, will be as directed by the stakeholder group. But that can quite easily then be separated from how issues are discussed or chaired, and so I think it creates quite a lot of scope for an even-handed chairing if you don't have to, if the vote is preset by your stakeholder group. That said, I wouldn't be expecting to personally come into the council with a strong overarching agenda. You know, I think chairing the council is what it, you know, what that phrase says. It's about trying to manage the council's workload effectively, work with the councillors to produce effective outcomes. And I don't think it's about, in by any stretch of the imagination, coming in with an overarching
agenda. This is not
the job of
a senior manager or a chief executive.
Sure, there'll be
leadership issues to deal with at times, and at times it'll take perhaps a bit of courage to try and nudge things in a certain direction to produce an outcome. But I don't think it's about saying, here's a strategy and a vision.
I think it's far more about,
probably the word that springs to mind is a form of stewardship of the
council,
rather than, you know,
a strong standing out front and saying, everyone follow me
type of leadership style. So those are my kind of thoughts on A, personal style, and B, where the current position is. And actually, it sort of leads me into a question. And I wondered where the non-contracted party's house, and you may not be able to answer this, is right now, but I wonder where the non-contracted party's house is in terms of nominating, in effect, a competing candidate to myself, or whether, is that a given, or is it yet to be determined in some ways based on the outcome of this or these discussions?
Well, I think I'm not entirely sure, but I think that the plan was to have an actual race and have candidates and I think that our House has to nominate a candidate in order for that to happen.
Understood. So if there is to be an election, then you've clearly got to have nominate a candidate. Of course, the alternative is that you, by whatever means, accept the contracted party's House candidate, which happens to be me now, and that turns out to be a consensus candidate. So that's really where the question's directed at, is do you see any chance of a consensus candidate, which is going to have to be me, given that I've already been nominated, or do you think we're likely to go to a sort of bake-off, a proper election, or do you not know whether that's going to work out at this stage?
I think either is possible. I think it really is just going to depend on how the membership, and particularly the councillors who will be voting, you know, how they perceive things. We've got a call scheduled with Thomas later and then with you today, and so the thought was, well, let's give everyone a listen and see what they have to say and then sort of put our heads together and figure out who would make the right candidate. So I think it's entirely possible that we'd have a consensus candidate. I think it's entirely possible we'd have a race on our hands.
Great.
Hello, this is Wolfgang. I just joined the call, but I was listening to you already for a couple of minutes. Thanks, Jonathan, for laying out what is your understanding of the leadership if you are elected. And I can only support what Robin just has said. You know, we have this under discussion since a couple of weeks. And, you know, from a certain, let's say, democracy perspective, it's always good to have a choice between two candidates. On the other hand, we also, you know, we have to work together in the future, and in so far, to have a consensus candidate is also, you know, an option. But I see this also in the context of the nominations for the vice chair. So that means we cannot probably isolate the elections from the chair and the two vice chairs. And so I see it more as a package. And in so far, you know, we need a little bit more discussion, but to be very frank, so that means I do not have any reservations, and also thank you for sending me your personal information. The only question I would have, and let me ask this quite directly, is because my understanding is from the document you did send to me that you are at the moment director of four different companies. Is this correct?
Yeah, but Wolfgang, it needs to be explained a little. So it's not. In fact, that's not. Let me make sure I pull that up, and so it's. So I talk to you directly to that document. So and make sure it's as current and accurate, and then I give you the right information. Bear with me one moment.
Okay.
What you've got listed there is Afilias. I am a non-executive director of Afilias.
Okay.
And I have been for some number of years. That means I'm not employed as a permanent staff member, or I'm a board member and contribute to the business by virtue of my role as a board member. Actually, it's an error now. That's out of date that I'm a director of nominate. It's not an error. In fact, what it says is from 2009 to present, those have been my activities, but my nominate directorship is no longer current. It was
okay. Yeah, that was my question, because with nominate, you know, I was questioning this. But anyhow, thank you for the clarification.
But you stumbled on a really important point there, because what I will tell you there is what happened there was, for some time, it was possible to be a director of both nominate and Afilias, and both companies were happy for me to be so. When the new GTLD program began to approach, it started to become clearer and clearer that a choice would have to be made. And in fact, I voluntarily stepped down from the nominate board, or in fact, the correct term is I did not put myself up for a next election by the membership, because I anticipated that sooner or later that would result in some form of conflict of interest that may become difficult or too difficult to manage. So it's an illustration of the way of the seriousness with which I take
you know, my responsibilities in a leadership position like that. And in fact, so I did not put myself up for re-election, and as a consequence, left the nominate board. IPRICON is really just a method by which I handle, you know, because I'm freelance, it's a way in which I can bill a company with which I work for my services. So that's me, really.
Okay, so my understanding. My problem was really, you know, the background was what you just mentioned, the conflict of interest, and I really appreciate your openness and the transparency, so this is very, very, very helpful. Thank you.
No problem at all. And then there's one other thing which you could reasonably ask on the back of that, and I thought that was where you might be going, is, well, what sort of time have you got for this? And I'll be honest with you, what I have in my mind, and I think this is, there's a couple of things you could say. From what I've spoken to people, this is a role that could take all of your time if you let it. It's potentially a very demanding role. I think it's reasonable, with some hard work and discipline, for the role to take to be handled in about half my time. So my budget that I would expect to spend on this, my personal budget, if you like, would be around 50% of my time. So I expect to give it a significant commitment, but it wouldn't be the only thing I did.
You know, this was also, you know, because I checked, you know, all your history, and I see, okay, probably, you know, with all this experience, you know, I think I would trust you, you know, that you know and understand how to handle issues, that you are not overwhelmed, you know, by the day-to-day operations, but really leave it to the people, also to the staff of ICANN, to manage the day-to-day business. I think what I expect from a chair is really, you know, to have more or less this strategic leadership and to go directly to the decisive points and not to the micromanagement of certain issues. And insofar, you know, I think your record is very helpful in convincing people that you have the personal skills which matches also, you know, the personal experience from the discussions we had in the last year in the council. But, you know, Robin, sorry that I jumping in here and you know, have occupied some of the discussion, but probably you can continue with your questions. But this was my main questions, the question of the conflict of interest and the time available for the commitment and how to handle this. Back to Robin.
Yes, thanks, Wolfgang. Robin, was there anything you'd like to say, or should I just sort of continue? I mean, we really are. It was actually appropriate in many ways, Wolfgang, to hear from you there, because in some ways this little section on the notional agenda I put to Robin for this meeting was to hear any concerns or issues you might have. So actually it was, you know, relevant to get that question. And in fact, one other small remark on that is that, you know, it strikes me that one of the challenges for the chair of the GNSO Council is to utilize and effectively utilize the ICANN policy staff. And actually, I was, in spite of having worked on the council for a period of time, when I looked at the staff resources that were available, it struck me that there's quite a substantial resource available. So I think you're right. One of the challenges is a management challenge to try and make best use of that staff assigned to the GNSO Council and to, you know, relevant associated policy work. So, Robin, I mean, this little section I thought of was an opportunity to perhaps hear any other concerns or issues you might have, and I really want to create that space. But if it was helpful, I'm happy to go on and make a few more remarks about how I see sort of acting as chair of the council and what that might mean, and then to take the questions at the end, if that would be helpful.
Okay, that's fine.
All right, well then let's move on to that. I mean, as I said to you, in some ways this has come up relatively fast. It's not that I haven't thought about it at all, but I have an open mind to how some issues might be handled by the council and how the council leadership might be run and managed. But I think for me there's some key points here, and you know, I think one of the key challenges that the council faces is its authority being questioned, and one of, or its effectiveness being questioned. And one of the things that causes people to question that is its productivity. And you see, and I think that's a real challenge, because the council, if you see a bunch of councillors who work hard and believe they are working hard, but yet from an external perception are not always, you know, the council is in some way seen to be unproductive. And so certainly for me, one key area of effort might be to try and improve that through a number of different ways. And that I think is about, you know, ensuring that the meetings themselves are engaging, and that the councillors themselves feel engaged, and that they are driven towards some form of outcomes insofar as that's possible. And the end game of all of that is to demonstrate to the council and the councillors themselves, as well as the broader community, that the council can be effective and productive. And as I said a moment ago, some of that's going to have to be ensured by the effective use of ICANN staff. And I'm very keen to engage as soon as possible with the relevant staff members and make sure that there's an effective working relationship between them and the council, and what has been you know, set up already is built on. I certainly think in order to be effective, the council, and to be effectively chaired, the council, one must accept the, you know, the diversity of the councillors, and both, again, as I said much earlier on, in terms of personality, but also positions they represent, and, you know, this bicameral structure, the diversity within each of the chambers, if you like, or the houses, is really needs to be recognized, understood, and worked with, and then to try and understand and manage the workload as well, and through that drive some sort of focus, effective participation and outcomes. So, you know, I think I said to you, Robin, in an email that, you know, I've grown up in South Africa. I've lived in Britain for the last 20 years. My parents are both English, but I have good experience of a range of different issues, political, personal, social, to understand global, economic, and other forms of diversity. So I'm not ignorant to the ranges of perspectives people might come from. And I think that will be helpful in terms of how to attempt to pull together and make the council effective when there is such a diverse set of positions that people potentially come from. So my other thing is I would certainly say that the sort of summary of that would be to, as far as possible, focus on consensus-oriented outcomes wherever possible. And, you know, I think even reduce, I mean, this is a bit risky. I don't know how this will go down with people, but wherever possible, I'd prefer a board or a council not to have to vote on issues, or at least to try and reduce the adversarial nature of the way in which decisions are made, if you like. And that's a key challenge that I think I'd like to at least attempt to work on. But that's probably enough said. You know, I think, as I said at the outset, leadership comes in a slightly different form in this sense than that from just standing out in front, which I guess you might argue all leadership does, and saying, follow me. But it comes from actually drawing people in and working with them and building some trust amongst one another and with the chair themselves. So that's my style and my thoughts on how to approach it so far. I'm open to any other questions or issues you guys might have.
Great. Thank you very much. Oh, there's an echo there. Okay, that's gone. Let me ask a question if I can. I know a number of our members are concerned about maintaining the multi-stakeholder model and the balance of interest between governments and civil society and the private sector, commercial players. And so I think what we've seen in recent years is an enlargement of the authority of governments at ICANN, sometimes through law enforcement, other times just strictly through governments in the GAC. And so I'm wondering, how do you see the role of governments in the multi-stakeholder model, and particularly with respect to civil society and NGOs?
Robin, I'm going to go out on a bit of a limb here, and I'm going to give you my honest thought on this, and that is that I think the rise in government involvement in ICANN was somewhat inevitable, and I am not surprised to see it happen. I think that governments have to be handled in a specific way, and I think it's presenting ICANN and the ICANN community with some significant challenges, because for a long period of time, the government involvement, the GAC, was a kind of sleeping giant. And that sleeping giant has woken up, whether we like it or not. So I think the challenge is not to try and put them back in their box, but provide some form of effective balance and response. And I hear you. I think that's really the challenge. But in many ways, the multi-stakeholder model provides for that. And I think if governments feel they aren't being heard or they don't have an effective voice, we're almost in more trouble than hearing it out and attempting to navigate that balance. So I think I accept the inevitable larger role of governments, but don't accept that needs to be dominant or you know, unduly heavy. So I think it's that is actually, I mean, one of the critical issues facing us, isn't it, going forward, is this sort of balancing commercial sector and the whole industry in and around this with the civil society issues. And that whole tension between IP rights, privacy. You know, I understand much of that. I mean, I grew up in an environment where, you know, it's hard to describe in short term, but I lived in a society where there was significant censorship, state control of media assets, and so on. I get it, you know. But like I say, in the ICANN context, I think we've got a challenge there to sort of navigate those. And so that's my take on it. It's recognizing the changes, but not letting any particular area get out of hand. I hope that gives a sort of honest and proper answer for you.
Yeah, it does. I mean, like you say, it's about a balancing act, and so just trying to maintain the right balance is difficult, and it's not always going to be the same in one circumstance to the next. Can I ask another question?
Please fire away.
Great. Another issue that has been of concern to our members is when the entire GNSO or the entire ICANN community comes together and we come up with a proposal and it gets consensus support and it gets approval, oftentimes we see other parties then take that consensus agreement and use it as a baseline to then go and extract more rights and more privileges. So it's just sort of a floor for then going and taking more as a consensus agreement and just going forward with what was agreed by everyone. And so how would you as chair try to maintain the consensus, the compromises that have been made, or would you, or how would you handle these attempts to always rewrite the agreement and use agreements as baselines for then going and getting more rights and more privileges in addition to what the consensus recommendation came out with?
Yeah, I think it's a key point, and I think probably the most live and current and sensitive issue about this is this whole issue of the International Olympic Committee and Red Cross named and how that's been handled. And I think that there's a sort of balance, I guess, between process and the sort of real politic of the whole thing. My first view is that the biggest challenge is to go back to first principles and attempt, insofar as it's possible, to reinforce the structures that exist and to emphasize that if the structures don't work for people, there are ways in which the structures can be changed. But for the most part, the structures are designed to provide a mechanism by which balanced and, as you say, consensus based or at least some form of multi-stakeholder input decisions are made. And that's really the area of attack is to focus on making sure that the existing structures are represented. There's a pragmatic side of me that says that in some instances that's going to be tested. I think there you rely on either people accepting that for whatever reason the consensus had to be developed, but if at all possible, that should go back to the structures that exist to deal with it. And I think it really undermines the model if that doesn't happen. And so I think that go back to the first point. The critical thing to do is to try and emphasize the model and the structures that are designed to support that. But that really goes back to what I was telling you about a kind of manifesto for chairing the council, and that's one has to demonstrate that the council and the structures, and it can't all rest on the council and the chair of the council, but that the ICANN structures themselves are effective at producing the right outcomes. And by the right outcomes, I mean those that genuinely represent the best output from the multi-stakeholder model. So I think that is the challenge. In order to defend the model, one must be able to defend the outcomes. So I think that's really the heart of the answer, though, is to wherever possible, defend the model and work within the structures as they are set up.
Okay, great. Thank you. I think that was the last question that I had. Is there anybody else on the line who would like to ask a question of Jonathan? Okay, well, I imagine...
Hello?
Forward them over to you after they listen to this recording. That would be great.
Yeah, I'm open to that, and if necessary and practical, I'll happily jump on another call and talk to one or more individuals, or counsellors or members of the group. So however it works, but I think it was a very sensible idea to record this so that people can hear the discussion we've had. And my sort of initial thoughts and views as to how to take this. So, Robin, thank you very much, and thanks, Wolfgang, for coming on the call. Let's hope this is useful for your group, and we'll take it from there.
It is extremely useful, and thank you. I really appreciate your taking the time to lay out your views to the membership and make yourself so open for discussion. I really, really appreciate it, and I expect that we probably will have some more questions, so I'll just be in touch with you via email about how to work that out.
Thanks again to both of you. I mean, I can, this to me is a significant responsibility and a challenge, and if it does work out and I do end up being elected, I'll treat it as such. So thanks again, and we'll no doubt talk either by email or on the telephone or in person in Toronto.
Great, thank you very much.
All right,
bye
for now.